Night came. Maskelyne thought the humans were never going to leave. One of them, with a torch and a box of tools, spent a long time examining fuse boxes and peering at the wiring in the basement. Now at last, even it was gone, grumbling and slamming the door behind it. After a little while, the lights came on in the garage. There was a rustling in the walls, then a dark tide flowed out from under benches. Some of the young gnomes in the lead carried hooks on the end of thread lines, which they swung up to the lorry's covers. They caught, one after another, and the gnomes swarmed up them. Other gnomes brought thicker string, which was tied to the ends of the thread and gradually dragged upwards. Maskelyne ran along under the endless shadow of the lorry to the oily darkness under the engine, where Dorcas's teams were already dragging their equipment into position. Dorcas himself was in the cab, rooting around among the thick wires. There was a sizzling noise, and then the lights in the cab came on. "There," said Dorcas. "Now we can see what we're at. Come on, lads. Let's have a bit of effort." When he turned round and saw Maskelyne, he made as if to hide his hands behind his back, and then thought better of it. Both of them were thrust into what Maskelyne could now see were the fingers cut out of rubber gloves.
"Oh," said Dorcas. "Didn't know you were there. Bit of a trade secret, see? Electricity can't abide rubber. It stops the stuff from biting you."
He ducked as a team of gnomes swung a long wooden beam across the cab and started to fasten it to the gear lever. "How long's it going to take?" shouted Maskelyne as another team ran past, dragging a ball of string.
"Could be an hour, maybe," said Dorcas.
Maskelyne nodded and explored the rear of the cab. He found another hole for a bundle of wires, which at a squeeze would take a gnome as well. He crawled out into the open air and then found another gap which let him into the rear of the lorry. The first gnomes aboard had dragged up one end of a thin piece of wood, which was acting as a gangplank. The rest were scrambling up it now. Maskelyne had put Granny Morky in charge of this. "Steep!" she was shouting at a fat gnome who had got halfway up and was clinging there in fright. "Call this steep! 'Tain't steep, it's a stroll! Want me to come down there and help you?" The mere threat budged him from his perch, and he nearly ran the rest of the way, ducking gratefully into the shadows of the cargo. "Everyone had better try to find somewhere soft to lie down," said Maskelyne. "It could be a rough journey. And you must send all the strongest gnomes up towards the cab. We're going to need everyone we can get, believe me." Maskelyne looked down at the endless stream of people climbing into the lorry. He felt he'd done everything he could. Everything was ticking over like a something that went tick. Either all the plans would work, or they wouldn't. Either the gnomes could act together, or they couldn't. He went back to the cab. Dorcas's gnomes had already built a wooden platform above the steering wheel and right in front of the big window. Dorcas himself was back down on the floor of the cab, drilling the driving teams.
"Right, give me first gear. Pedal down, 2, 3,
chorused the team on the clutch pedal.
"Pedal up, 2, 3, shouted the accelerator team. "Lever up, 2, 3,
echoed the gnomes by the gear lever.
"Pedal up, 2, 3, 4,
the leader of the clutch team threw Dorcas a salute.
"Gear all change, sir."
That was terrible. Really terrible. "What's happened to the accelerator team, eh? Get that. Pedal down.
Sorry, Dorcas."
Maskelyne tapped Dorcas on the shoulder. "Everyone's nearly on. When will you be ready?" "This lot won't be ready ever."
"Oh. So we might as well start whenever you like and pick it up as we go along.
We can't even try steering until it's moving, of course." "We're going to send a lot more people to help you," said Maskelyne.
"Oh, good," said Dorcas. "Just what I need. Lots more people who don't know their right from their left."
"How are you going to know which way to steer?"
"Semaphore," said Dorcas firmly.
"Semaphore?"
"Signal him with white flags. You just tell my lad up on the platform what you want done, and I'll watch the signals."
"Flags?" said Maskelyne. "Will that work?" The last gnome scouts had climbed aboard. In the back of the lorry, most of the people made themselves as comfortable as possible and lay wide awake in the darkness. Maskelyne was up on the platform with Angelo, Gerda and the Thing. Gerda knew even less about lorries than Maskelyne, but it was felt best to have him there just in case. After all, they were stealing Arnold Brothers S1905's lorry. Someone might have to do some explaining. Grimmer was there too. Gerda asked her what she was doing there. She asked him what he was doing there. They both looked at Masklin. "She can help me with the reading," he said. He wasn't all that good at it. Grimmer, on the other hand, seemed to do it now without thinking. If her brain was exploding, it was doing it in unnoticeable ways. She nodded smugly and propped the highway code open in front of him. "There's things you've got to do," he said uncertainly. "Before you start, you've got to look in a mirror," said Grimmer. "Mirror," said Masklin firmly. He looked inquiringly at Angelo, who shrugged. "I don't know anything about that. My driver used to look at it, but I don't know why." "Whatever it is, we'd better do things properly," said Gerda firmly. He pointed. "There's a mirror up there, near the ceiling." Masklin managed to hook it with a grapnel and pull himself up to it. "Can you see anything?" Gerda called out. "Just me." "Well, come on back down. You've done it. That's the main thing." Masklin slid back down. Grimmer peered at the code. "Then you've got to signal your intentions," she said. "That's clear anyway. Signal her!" One of Dorcas's assistants stepped forward, holding his two white flags. "Yes, sir, ma'am." "Tell Dorcas. Tell him we're ready to start." "Excuse me," said Gerda. "If it's anyone's job to tell them when we're ready to start, it's my job to tell them when we're ready to start. I want it to be quite clear that I'm the person who tells people to start." He looked sheepishly at Grimmer. "We're ready to start," he said. "Right you are, ma'am." The signaller waved his arms briefly. From far below, the engineer's voice boomed back. "Ready!" "Well then," said Masklin, "this is it then." He went to the edge of the platform and leant on the flimsy rail. The whole of the floor of the cab was covered in gnomes, holding ropes in readiness or waiting by their levers and pulleys. They stood in absolute silence in the shadows, but every face was turned upwards, so that Masklin looked down at a sea of frightened and excited blobs. He waved his hand. "Start the engine," he said, and his voice sounded unnaturally loud in the expectant silence. There was a whirring noise from somewhere in front of them, and then the platform shook to a thunder roll. And like thunder, it didn't die away. The engine had started. Masklin grabbed hold of the rail before he was shaken off and felt Angelo tug on his sleeve. "I think we'd better practice a bit to get the hang of it. Shall I tell the signaller that we want to move forward very slowly?" Masklin nodded grimly. The signaller thought for a moment and then waved his flags. Masklin could distantly hear Dorcas yelling orders. There was a grinding noise, followed by a jolt that almost knocked him over. He managed to land on his hands and knees and looked into Gerda's frightened face. "We're moving!" shouted the stationary. Masklin stared out of the windscreen. "Yes, and you know what?" he yelled, springing up. "We're moving backwards!" Angelo staggered over to the signaller, who had dropped one of his flags. "Forward slowly," I said. "Forward slowly, not backward, forward. I signalled forward, but we're going backward. Signal to them to go forward." There was a sound from the far end of the lorry. The only word to describe it was crunch. But that's far too short and simple a word to describe the nasty, complicated, metallic noise and the jolt that threw Masklin on his stomach again. The engine stopped. The echoes died away. "Sorry," Dorcas called out in the distance. They heard him talking in a low, menacing voice to the teams. "Satisfied, satisfied, are we? When I said move the gear lever up and left and up, I meant up and left and up, not up and right and up, right?" "Your right or our right, Dorcas?" Masklin and the others sat down as the argument skidded back and forth below them. Gerda was still lying on the planks. "We actually moved," he was whispering. "Arnold Brothers S1905 was right. Everything must go."
I'd like it to go a little further, if it's all right by him, said Angelo grimly.
Hello up there!
Dorcas's voice boomed with mad cheerfulness.
Little bit of teething trouble down here, all sorted out now. Ready when you are.
Should I look in the mirror again? Said Masklin. I shouldn't bother, said Angelo. Let's just go forwards. As soon as possible, I think. I can smell diesel. We must have knocked over some drums of it or something. That's bad, is it? Said Masklin. It burns, said Angelo. It just needs a spark or something to set it off. The engine roared into life again. This time, they did inch forward, after some grinding noises, and rolled across the floor until the lorry was in front of the big steel door. It stopped with a slight jerk.
Like to try a few practice turns, shouted Dorcas. Smooth out a few rough edges.
I really think it would be a very bad idea to stay here, said Angelo urgently. You're right, said Masklin. He leant over the rail.
Dorcas!
Yes!
Open the door. We've got to get out now.
You'll laugh when I tell you this.
Come on! Shouted Masklin. Dorcas's reply was lost in the din from the engine.
What?
Shouted Masklin.
What?
What did you say?
I said, in all this rush, I clean forgot about the door.
What did he say? Said Gerda. Masklin turned and looked at the door. Dorcas had been very proud of the way he'd stopped it opening. Now it had an extremely closed look. If something with no face could look smug, the door had managed it. He turned back in time to see the small door to the rest of the store swing slowly open. There was a figure there behind a little circle of sharp white light. His terrible torch, Masklin thought again. It was prices slashed, old security. Oh, no, whispered Angelo as the figure lurched across the floor. Do you see what it's got in its mouth? It's a cigarette. I've seen humans with it before. What about it? Said Masklin. It's a light, said Angelo. Do you think it can't even smell the diesel? What happens if it catches a light, then? Said Masklin, suspecting that he knew the answer. It goes woomph, said Angelo. Just woomph. Woomph is enough. The human came nearer. Masklin could see its eyes now. Humans weren't very good at seeing gnomes, even when they were standing still. But even a human would wonder why a lorry was driving itself around its garage in the middle of the night. Security arrived at the cab and reached out slowly for the door handle. His torch shone in through the side window, and at that moment, Gerda reared up, trembling with rage. "Begone, foul fiend!" he yelled, illuminated as by a spotlight. "Heed ye the signs of Arnold Brossest, 1905! No smoking! Exit this way!" The human's face wrinkled in ponderous astonishment and then became an expression of panic. It turned and began to head for the little door at high speed. As it did so, the glowing cigarette fell from its mouth and, turning over and over, dropped slowly towards the floor. Masklin and Angelo looked at each other and then at the signaller.
"Go fast!" they shouted.
A moment later, the lorry juddered as the teams tackled the complicated process of changing gear. Then it rolled forward.
Fast! I said fast! Masklin shouted.
The world of gnomes is, to humans, a rapid world. They live so fast that the things that happen around them seem quite slow, so the lorry seemed to drift across the floor, up the ramp, and hit the door in a leisurely way. There was a long, drawn-out boom and the noise of bits of metal being torn apart, a scraping noise across the roof of the cab, and then there was no door at all, only darkness studded with lights.
"Left! Go left!"
Angelo screamed. The lorry skidded around slowly, bounced lazily off a wall and rolled a little way down the street.
"Keep going! Keep going! Ah! Now, straighten up!"
A bright light shone briefly on the wall outside the cab, and then behind them, a sound like woomph.
Later on, when the Book of Nome came to be written, they said the end of the store started with a bang. In fact, the ball of yellow and orange fire that rolled out of the garage carrying the remains of the door with it just made a noise like a giant dog gently clearing its throat. Oomph. The gnomes weren't in a position to take much notice of it at the time. They were more concerned with the noise made by other things nearly hitting them. Masklin had been prepared for other vehicles on the road. The highway code had a lot to say about it. It was important not to drive into them. What was worrying him was the way they seemed determined to run into the lorry. They emitted long, blaring noises like sick cows.
Left a bit, Angelo shouted. Then right, just a smidgen, then go straight.
Smidgen, said the signaller slowly. I don't think I know a code for smidgen. Could we...
Slow! Now left a bit! We've got to get on the right side of the road!
Grimmer peered over the top of the highway code. We are on the right side, she said.
Yes, but the right side should be the left side!
Masklin jabbed at the page in front of them. It says here, we've got to show consideration... murmured Grimmer. Consideration for other road users. A jolt threw him forward.
What was that?
He said.
Us going onto the pavement. Right, right!
Masklin caught a brief glimpse of a brightly lit shop window before the lorry hit it sideways on and bounced back onto the road in a shower of glass.
Now left! Now left! Now right! Right, straight! Left! I said left!
Angelo peered at the bewildering pattern of lights and shapes in front of them.
There's another road here, he said. Left. Give me left. Lots and lots of left. More left than that.
There's a sign, said Masklin helpfully.
Left, shrieked Angelo. Now right, right, right.
You wanted left, said the signaller.
And now I want right. Lots of right. Duck!
We haven't got a signal for... This time, woomph wouldn't have done. It was definitely bang. The lorry hit a wall, ground along it in a spray of sparks, rolled into a pile of dustbins, and stopped. There was silence, except for the hissing sounds and pink-pink noises from the engine. Then Dorcas's voice came up from the darkness.
Would you mind telling us down here what you're doing up there?
We'll have to think of a better way of steering, Angelo called down. And lights! There should be a switch somewhere for lights.
Masklin struggled to his feet. The lorry appeared to be stuck in a dark, narrow road. There were no lights anywhere. He helped Gerda stand up and brushed him down. The stationary looked bewildered.
We're there? He said.
Not quite, said Masklin. We've stopped to sort out a few things. While they're doing that, I think we'd better go back and check that everyone's all right. There was a gabble of voices in the back of the lorry, mixed with the crying of babies. Quite a few gnomes had been bruised by the throwing about, and Granny Morky was tying a splint to the broken leg of a gnome who'd been caught by a falling box when they hit the wall.
Why have we stopped? She asked.
Just to sort out a few things, said Masklin, trying to sound more cheerful than he felt. We'll be moving again soon. While we're waiting, I'm going to take a look outside. He nudged Gerda. Wanna come?
What? Outside? Me?
The stationary looked terrified. You'll have to sooner or later. Why not now? A team of gnomes helped them over the end of the lorry, and they swung down onto what Gerda would almost certainly have called the floor. It was damp, and a fine spray hung in the air. Masklin breathed deeply. This was outside, all right. Real air with a slight chill to it.
The sprinklers have come on, said Gerda.
The what?
The sprinklers. They're in the ceiling, you know, in case of...
He stopped and looked up.
Oh, my, he said.
I think you mean the rain, said Masklin.
Oh, my.
It's just water coming out of the sky, said Masklin.
Oh, my.
You were right. Gerda was trembling.
There's no roof. And it's so big.
Masklin patted him on the shoulder.
Of course. All this is new to you. You mustn't worry if you don't understand everything.
Masklin turned and looked up at the lorry. was almost wedged in an alleyway littered with rubbish. The opening at the far end of the alley was bright with streetlights in the drizzle. As he watched, a vehicle swished by with a blue light flashing. It was singing.
"How odd,"
said Gerda. "It used to happen sometimes at home," said Masklin. "You'd hear ones going along the motorway like that. Dee-da, 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 dee-da." They crept along the gutter and craned to look over the pavement at the corner.
"Oh, bargains galore," said Gerda,
and put his hands over his mouth. The store was on fire. Humans bustled around in the street below it. There were a couple of lorries with ladders on them. They were spraying water into the building. Masklin looked sidelong at Gerda, wondering what the gnome was going to do.
It's not how I imagined it," he croaked.
"No," said Masklin.
We got out just in time."
"Yes." Gerda coughed. It was as if he'd just had a long debate with himself and reached a decision.
"Thanks to Arnold Brothers Est 1905.
"Pardon?" Gerda stared at Masklin's face.
"If he hadn't called you to the store, we'd all still be in there," he said, sounding more confident with every word.
"But..." Masklin paused. "That didn't make any sense. If they hadn't left, there wouldn't have been a fire, would there?" "Hard to be sure. Best not to argue. Come on," he said. "Let's get back. I think we should get as far away as possible as quickly as we can."
"I shall ask Arnold Brothers Est 1905 to guide us and lead us," said Gerda firmly.
"Yes, good," said Masklin. "Good idea. Why not?" Everyone needs something, he thought. And you never know.
"I pull this string,"
said Angelo, indicating the thread over his shoulder that disappeared down into the depths of the cab,
"and the leader of the steering wheel left pulling team will know I want to turn left because it's tied to his arm, and this other one goes to the right pulling team."
"What about lights?" said Masklin. Angelo beamed.
"What we did was, we tied threads to switches..."
There was a click. A big metal arm moved across the windscreen, clearing away the raindrops. "Doesn't really illuminate much, does it?" said Grimmer.
"Wrong switch," muttered Angelo.
There was some muffled argument below them, and then another click. Instantly, the cab was filled with the sound of a human voice.
"It's all right," said Angelo. "It's only the radio, but it's not the lights, tell Dorcas."
The radio fell silent. There was a few seconds' pause, and then the alley in front of the lorry was bathed in white light.
"There should be two, but one got broken when we left the store," said Angelo. "Well, then, are we ready?"
Masklin nodded.
"Okay," he said. "Let's go."
It seemed much better this time. The lorry scraped along the wall for a moment and then came free and moved gently down the narrow alley towards the lights at the far end. As the lorry came out from between the dark walls, Angelo called for the brakes, and it stopped with only a mild jolt.
"Which way?"
he said. Masklin looked blank.
"There's a sign," said Angelo, peering through the rain. "It says Town Centre, and then there's an arrow, and it says..."
He squinted.
"Onny..."
"One-way street," murmured Grimmer. "Town Centre doesn't sound like a good idea," said Masklin.
"We'll go the other way, then," said Angelo, hauling on a thread.
"And I'm not sure about one-way street," said Masklin. "I think you should only go along it one way."
"Well, we are," said Angelo smugly. "We're going this way."
The lorry rolled out of the side road and bumped neatly onto the pavement.
"Let's have second gear," said Angelo, "and a bit more go-faster pedal."
A car swerved out of the lorry's way, its horn sounding like the lost wail of a foghorn.
"Shouldn't be allowed on the road, drivers like that," said Angelo.
"Remember to show consideration for other road users," said Masklin.
"Well, I am, aren't I?" said Angelo.
"What was that thump?" "Some bushes, I think," said Masklin.
"Why do they put things like that in the road?"
"I think the road is more sort of over to your right," said Gerda. It was nearly midnight. The rain had stopped, but there were wisps of mist coiling across the road. It's almost peaceful.
"Right, third gear," said Angelo, "and a bit faster. Now, what's that sign coming up?"
Looks like road works ahead, said Grimmer in a puzzled voice.
Sounds good. Let's have some more fast down there.
Yes, but, said Masklin, why say it? I mean, you could understand road doesn't work ahead. Why tell us it works? He leant over the edge of the platform.
Stop! He shouted. Lots and lots of stop!
There was a scream from the tyres, yells from the gnomes who were thrown forward, and then a lot of crunching and clanging from the front of the lorry as it skidded through an assortment of barriers and cones.
There had better, said Angelo when it had finally stopped,
be a very good reason for that. Look down, that's all. Just look down, said Masklin. Angelo peered down at the road ahead. The most interesting thing about it was that it wasn't there. Then he turned to the signaller.
Could we please have just a wee bit of backwards? A smidgen, said the signaller.
And none of your cheek, said Angelo. Grimmer was staring at the hole in the road. It was big. It was deep. A few pipes lurked in the depths.
Sometimes, she said, I think humans really don't understand anything about the proper use of language.
She leafed through the code as the lorry was reversed carefully away from the pit and, after crushing various things, driven onto the grass until the road was clear.
It's time we were sensible about this, she said. We can't assume anything means what it says, so go slow.
Another sign loomed up.
Roundabout, said Angelo, and a picture of a circle. Well, any ideas?
Grimmer leafed desperately through the code.
I saw a picture of a roundabout once, said Gerda. It was in We Go to the Fair. It's a big shiny thing with lots of golden horses on it.
I'm sure that's not it, muttered Grimmer, turning the pages hurriedly. I'm sure there's something in here, some...
Gold, eh? Said Angelo. Should be easy to spot anyway. I think, he glared at Grimmer, that we can have a little third gear.
Right you are, Mr. Angelo, sir, said the signaller.
Can't see any golden horses, said Masklin. You know, I'm not entirely certain, and there should be cheerful music, said Gerda.
There was the long, drawn-out blast of a car horn. The road stopped and was replaced by a mound covered in bushes. The lorry roared up it, all wheels leaving the ground for a moment, then thumped down on the other side of the roundabout and continued a little way, rocking from side to side on the opposite road. It rolled to a halt. There was silence in the cab again. Then someone groaned. Masklin crawled to the edge of the platform and looked down into the frightened face of Gerda, who was hanging onto the edge.
What happened? He groaned.
Masklin hauled him back up to safety and dusted him off.
I think, he said, that although the signs mean what they say isn't what they mean.
Grimmer pulled herself out from underneath the code. Angelo untangled himself from the lengths of string and found himself looking into her furious scowl.
You, she said, are a total idiot and speed mad. Why don't you listen? You can't speak to me like that, said Angelo. Gerda, tell her she can't call me names like that.
Gerda sat trembling on the edge of the platform.
As far as I am concerned right now, he said, she can call you what she likes. Go to it, young woman. And don't you young woman me in that tone of voice, screamed Grimmer.
Dorcas's voice came up from the depths.
I don't want to interrupt anything, but if this happens one more time, there are people down here who will be getting very angry. Is that understood?
Just a minor steering problem, Masklin called down cheerfully.
He turned back to the others. Now, you all look here. This arguing has got to stop. Every time we hit a problem, we start bickering. It's not sensible. There's a whole truckload of gnomes back there. They're depending on you. Understand? They looked at one another. They stood up sheepishly. Said Angelo quietly. I think a little bit of first gear might be in order here, if it's all the same to everybody. At least there were no more buildings. The lorry purred along the lonely road, its one remaining headlight making a white glow in the mist. Masklin knew that soon they should be looking for somewhere to stop. It would have to be somewhere sheltered, away from humans, but not too far away, because he was pretty certain there were still plenty of things the gnomes were going to need. It was at that moment, tired, angry, with his mind not entirely on what was in front of him, that he saw prices slashed. There was no doubt about it. The human was standing in the road, waving its torch. There was a car beside him with a blue flashing light on top.
"Prices slashed," moaned Gerda. "He's got here in front of us."
"More speed," said Angelo grimly. "What are you going to do?" said Masklin. "We'll see how his torch can stand up to a lorry." "You can't do that. You can't drive lorries into people." "It's prices slashed," said Angelo. "It's not people." Masklin grabbed the steering strings and gave one a yank. The lorry skewed around just as prices slashed, dropped his torch and jumped into the hedge. There was a bang as the rear of the lorry hit the car, and then Angelo had the threads again and was guiding them back into something like a straight line. "You didn't have to do that," he said sullenly. "It's all right to run into prices slashed, isn't it, Gerda?" Said Gerda, "I'm not sure it was prices slashed. In fact, he had darker clothes, for one thing." "Yes, but he had the peaked hat and the terrible torch." The lorry bumped off a bank, taking away a large chunk of soil, and lurched back into the road. Masklin saw a blue light out of the corner of his eye. There were mirrors over the wheels of the lorry, and although one of them was smashed and the other one was bent, they still worked after a fashion. The light was behind the lorry. "He's coming after us, whoever it is," he said mildly.
"And there's that dee-da, dee-da noise," said Gerda.
"I think," Masklin went on, "that it might be a good idea to get off this road." Angelo glanced from side to side. "Too many hedges," he said. "No, I mean onto another road. Can you do that?" 10-4, no problem. "Hey, he's trying to overtake. What a nerve! Ha!" The lorry swerved violently. "Just find another road. A small road," said Masklin soothingly. "I'll be back in a minute." He lowered himself down the swaying ladder to Dorcas and his people. There was a ragged cheer when Masklin joined them. Dorcas was sitting by himself, scribbling things on a piece of paper. "We're being followed by someone who wants to make a stop," said Masklin. "Another lorry?" "A car, I think, with humans in it." Dorcas scratched his chin. "What do you want me to do about it?" If there had been watchers peering over the hedge into that mist-wreathed country lane, they would have seen a lorry come thundering along at quite an unsafe speed. They might have wondered why it had a roadworks ahead sign hanging from one door handle, and they would have certainly wondered why it rolled to a stop. The police car behind it stopped rather more impressively in a shower of gravel. Two men almost fell out of it and ran to the lorry, wrenching open the doors. If the watchers had been able to understand human, they'd have heard someone say, "All right, chummy, that's it for tonight," and then say, "Where's he gone? There's just a load of string in here." And then someone else would say, "I'll bet he's nipped out and has legged it over the fields." And while this was going on, and while the policemen poked vaguely in the hedge and shone their torches into the mist, the watchers might have noticed a couple of very small shadows run from under the rear of the lorry and disappear under the car. They were carrying a pair of pliers. A few seconds later, they scurried back again, and almost as soon as they disappeared under the lorry, it started up. The men shouted and ran back to their car. But instead of roaring into life, it went... After a while, one of them got out and lifted the bonnet. As the lorry vanished into the mist, its single rear light a fading glow, he knelt down, reached under the car, and held up a handful of neatly cut wires. This is what the watchers would have seen. In fact, the only watchers were a couple of cows, and they didn't understand any of it. A couple of days later, the lorry was found in a ditch some way outside the town. What was stranger was this. The battery and every wire, light bulb and switch had been taken out of it. So had the radio. The cab was full of bits of string. It had been a quarry. The gnomes knew this because the gate had a rusty sign on it. Quarry. Dangerous. Do not enter. They found it after a mad, panicking run across the fields. It doesn't matter how they settled in, found the few old tumble-down buildings, explored the caves and rock heaps, cleared out the rats. That wasn't too difficult. The harder part was persuading most of the older store gnomes to go outside. They felt happier with a floor over their heads. Granny Morky came in useful there. She made them watch her walk up and down outside, braving the terrible fresh air. Besides, the food taken from the store didn't last forever. There was hunger, and there were rabbits in the fields above. Vegetables, too. The molehills that appeared in a nearby field were the result of the first experimental potato mine. And then there was Dorcas's discovery of electricity, still in wires, leading to a box in one of the deserted sheds. Getting at it while staying alive seemed to need nearly as much planning as the great drive. Masklin had pushed the thing near one of the electric wires. It had flashed a few lights, but had kept silent. He felt it was listening. He could hear it listening. He'd taken it away again and tucked it into a gap in one of the walls. He had an obscure feeling that it wasn't time to use the thing yet. And so the winter became spring, and spring became summer. Masklin sat on the rocks above the quarry, on guard. One of Dorcas's inventions, a switch which was connected to a wire which would light a bulb down under one of the sheds, was hidden under a stone by his side. Masklin looked down at the quarry below him. He could just make out Grimmer sitting in the sun with some of the young gnomes, teaching them to read. Beyond the moon, the thing had said, you used to live in the stars. Masklin lay back and listened to the bees. One day we'll go back. We'll find a way to get to the big ship in the sky, and we'll go back. But not yet. It'll take some doing. And the hard part, again, will be getting people to understand. Every time we climb up a step, we settle down and think we've got to the top of the stairs and start bickering about things. Still, even knowing that the stairs are there is a pretty good start. From here, he could see for miles across the countryside. For instance, he could see the airport. It had been quite frightening the day they'd seen the first jet go over. But a few of the gnomes had recalled pictures from books they'd read, and it turned out to be nothing more than a sort of lorry built to drive in the sky. He'd led a team of gnomes across the fields to the airport. It had been a week's journey, but there were 30 of them, and there'd be no problem. They'd found the wire fence and climbed up it a little way and spent hours watching the planes landing and taking off. Masklin had felt, just as he'd done once or twice before, that here was something very important. The jets looked big and terrible. But once he'd thought that about lorries. You just had to know about them. Once you had the name, you had something you could handle, like a sort of lever. One day that could be useful. One day the gnomes might need them to take another step. Dorcas had been watching the planes too, clinging to the wire. And Masklin had said, just supposing, for the sake of argument, you understand, we need to steal one of those. Do you think it could be done? And Dorcas had rubbed his chin thoughtfully. Shouldn't be too hard to drive, he said, and grinned. They've only got 3 wheels.